TanTalkRadio.com.
This is the TanTalk Radio Network.
Love some of those songs that Big Ed pulls out for us. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy along with my buddy Big Ed Davis. Thank you for being with us on this Monday, July the 17th. We are rolling along in the month, are we not? We got a lot going on today. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Wayne Cruz of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and we're going to talk to him about Republican efforts in Congress to curb, I guess, a horde of government regulations that could really cripple the economy. We got to start putting our foot down because it's costing us an arm and a leg. So stay tuned for that. And FBI Director Chris Wray and National Security Spokesman John Kirby are being taken to task for some rather breathtaking comments they've made during recent appearances, and we are going to look into those as well. And the crown jewel of socialized medicine in the world, longstanding, has been Britain's National Health Service, and it is in its deepest crisis ever. And we're going to tell you a little bit about it, so stay tuned for that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, on our last show, Friday, we gave you the top 10 best NFL stadiums. So we are going to give you today the top 10 worst NFL stadiums. I want to find out if Ed has ever been sitting in a seat in one of them. So stay tuned for that as well. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored by Andrew's Master Barbershop. I'm telling you guys, I have never found a better place for a haircut than in Dunedin. In the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 on Overcash Drive, Andrew's Master Barbershop. Great haircut, great price. Call for your appointment, please. 727-733-3773. And we're also sponsored by Arbor Life Tree Service. Now, whether it's tree enhancement, tree removal, you got a anything to do with trees. You got stumps you needed removed. Whatever it is, if it has to do with trees, ArborLife is Tampa Bay's premier tree service. I know. I've used them. They are great. Call ArborLife for a free estimate, and their number is 727-330-1999. So, Representative Mike Johnson, he's a Republican. He's from Louisiana. He is calling on Chris Wray, the FBI director, to correct what he said before his congressional committee in testimony. Johnson alleges Chris Wray made a number of demonstrably untrue statements during his appearance. I thought he did myself. In fact, I was blown away by some of the things that Chris Wray had to say. I got up. I was really upset with some of the things he got away with. Johnson says this: we are going to point out the contradictions and what he said under oath, and we will start with that. Johnson went on to say, I think some of the answers Chris Wray provided to us in the hearing were demonstrably untrue. It's just a problem that scandal upon scandal continues to stack up. You know, it's funny. I don't know. Now, Donald Trump appointed this guy. And I noticed that Donald Trump is, He's rather reluctant to say he would fire Chris Wray if he becomes president again. My hunch is that he will. But because he hired him, he's got a little egg on his face. Anyway, in a heated line of questioning, when Chris Wray was before the House Oversight Committee, Johnson charged that he found it stunning that Chris Wray made no mention in his opening statement about the July 4th injunction that was issued by a U.S. district judge ordering the White House, the Justice Department, and the FBI, and other agencies to limit their communication with social media companies regarding efforts to censor people. Do you remember that brouhaha? And the government was trying to coerce Facebook and Twitter at the time to censor what certain people were saying. Do you remember all of that? Very, very unusual. Well, Wray deflected the question. Wray insisted the Bureau is not focused on disinformation and that he is, quote, absolutely not, unquote, protecting the Bidens amid allegations that Hunter Biden was influenced and taking payoffs. I mean, it was amazing that Chris Wray would sit there with that blank look on his face as if nothing ever happened. They knew that Hunter Biden's computer laptop was real before the election between Trump and Biden, and they refused to acknowledge that. Do you remember that? And Chris Wray has the nerve to get in front of Congress and say that there wasn't any cover-up going on? Wray also refused to answer questions from lawmakers on the committee on whether Biden is under federal investigation for alleged criminal bribery. And he went on, this is Wray, he told the committee about the good work of the FBI while denying any alleged politicization. In fact, he said, claims that he is biased against conservatives is, quote, somewhat insane, unquote. Now, Wray is purported to be a conservative, and he might be, but he's certainly been influenced by all of the goings-on and the cover-ups in the FBI, and he's part of it. I don't think there's any question. In the meantime, John Kirby, you know who he is? He gets up in front of reporters, and he's the guy that is the spokesman for the National Security Agency, the National Security Council. He has lauded the Secret Service as in praising the Secret Service's investigation into the cocaine found in the White House. He thinks they did a wonderful job. They did a great job. Well, they did do a great job if a cover-up is the intent. You know, nobody knows.
I would like to know, and if somebody was around, a regular at the White House could find out, have there been any changes on how you're screened getting into the White House now since the incident? Because this white powdery substance that we said could have been anthrax or anything.
You're right.
Got through. So what do? You change things and you become more diligent and finding and more thorough. Body cavity search maybe for a couple people? Who knows?
Yeah.
But if this got through and they clearly admit, hey, got through, no fingerprints, we don't know how the heck it happened. Well, then, you know what? As the director or whatever says, okay, we got to put the hammer down. Everybody now gets checked inside and out.
Yep.
I wonder if that's happening now.
Yeah.
Or is it just business as usual?
I think it's going to be BAU, business as usual. That's what I think. You know, when these, and I can kind of understand, when the same people are coming through, okay, but, and they're coming in, and they're coming through that thing day after day after day, you know, you start to let your guard down a little bit, right? You're supposed to apparently drop things off into these little pockets or whatever it is as you go in. It's like, you know, when you're going through the airport, you put it in the bucket and
sure.
All that kind. But do you really think they don't know?
But this was on the... Oh, they know. But
okay.
this was on
well,
the
that's
West...
that's the answer.
This was the West Wing. This,
I know.
Only certain people are allowed to go
in.
I
know.
And you're telling me there's no video surveillance...
Exactly.
...at all.
Exactly. There's... I think if you went around and you asked people if it was anthrax instead of coke, do you think they would have found out who it was that tried to get it in there? And I think the answer would have been yes, because they would have really been diligent.
Sure. I mean, look what could have happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. So John Kirby is praising them. By the way, the Secret Service did announce that it's closed its investigation. Let's see here.
Kirby would praise a corned beef sandwich.
He probably would.
Given time.
Here's, and listen to this. Kirby says that the Biden administration takes the whole matter seriously while noting the cocaine was found in a highly trafficked area of the White House. He says, that's not the kind of thing we want to see happen. Now, it did happen in a visitor's lobby area just outside the main West Wing. So it was a highly trafficked area. We're going to take a look at how that happened. And obviously, if there's things we can do to prevent this in the future, certainly we'll do that. Nobody's happy about this.
If I were the President of the United States, I would say, I would hope you could figure this thing out.
I think there's a couple of people pretty happy about it.
I'd be upset if I were the President of the United States. I'd be very upset. I'd have somebody's job. Because your job is to protect me, and you did not protect me.
Yeah, except when it's my son that's brought it in, possibly. Then that's okay. Then it's a, never mind. I mean, you know, this is the thing. By the way, has Biden said anything about it?
No.
No, not a word. He doesn't seem too bothered. Anyway, enough about that. We're going to take our break because our buddy Wayne Cruz is patiently waiting. And when we come back, we'll talk with Wayne about efforts in Congress to curb a horde of government regulations that could cripple the economy.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, and insect control to grinding and removal, you get an experienced, ISA certified, and veteran-owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Delighted to have back an old friend, Wayne Cruz of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He is the Fred L. Smith Fellow in Regulatory Studies at CEI, and we're going to talk with him about what he has coined regulatory dark matter. What is that? Well, all these regulations that are imposed by the government on businesses, and by the way, listen to this, regulations cost the U.S. economy nearly $2 trillion, that's with a T, $2 trillion annually. It just is mind-boggling. Wayne, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always our pleasure to have you. We always learn a lot from you. And apparently this week, Republicans in Congress are advancing three bills that are geared towards, in some way, shape, or form, slowing down regulations, helping the economy and business. Is that true?
Yes, it's a good thing. It happened last week. There was a markup of certain key regulatory reform bills. And you mentioned something called regulatory dark matter. To me, that was the more significant one. There, you know, you have a few dozen laws coming out of agencies every year, but you also have over 3,000 rules and regulations coming out of the agencies. And on top of that, though, are thousands of regulatory guidance documents, circulars, bulletins, notices, administrative interpretations, all these sorts of issuances coming out of agencies that also can have regulatory effect. And what struck me last week was this was a committee markup of the so-called GOOD Act, which stands for Guidance Out of Darkness. And what occurred was not just the Republicans advanced this thing, but the Democrats on the committee and the House Oversight Government Reform Committee unanimously advanced this bill, too. So it was extremely significant. I'd always thought the GOOD Act was kind of the low-hanging fruit of regulatory reform because it's hard to be against just disclosure of all of these guidance documents on a portal, which is essentially what it calls for. So that was the big good news. The other is that legislation related to unfunded mandates on state and local governments also advanced. So a couple of good things happened. It's potentially, you know, Biden could actually sign the GOOD Act. I don't think he's going to sign the Unfunded Mandates Act. The Democrats were not in support of some of these other measures with the same kind of enthusiasm. So, but it's interesting.
Yeah, no, well, is the GOOD Act really going to do anything? It does sound good. Guidance out of dark matter. I like that. And by the way, you coined the term, I like that, dark matter. Because that seems like, first of all, nobody... I mean, all of these regulations that are coming out, one on top of another, it's like you don't even want to start a business if you have to be involved with the federal government. You just don't. You're totally intimidated out of it. I thought the purpose of our federal government was to make things better for individual freedom. It's the opposite.
Right. I feel like with all of this red tape, it gets a lot harder to start a business for the people who have that hungry streak. But the last time we got major regulatory reform in the United States has now been a generation ago. It was back during the 90s when you had the governors and small business in Washington complaining about unfunded mandates, small business paperwork burdens, all the sort of red tape that you're talking about in what you just said. Well, that was the last time we had unanimity in regulatory reform, and we don't have anything like that today, of course, because you've seen, in addition to the CARES Act, there's a lot of progressive ambition with respect to Biden and his American Rescue Plan, the Infrastructure Act, the Inflation Act, the whole climate agenda, the equity agenda. Biden even has a term, whole of government, for all the things he's trying to do on equity, climate, competition policy, and digital currency, and so forth. So I predict, you said, is the GOOD Act going to do anything? I think it's very, you can't say it's the end all, but it is a prerequisite to at least start disclosing this stuff.
Yeah.
The GOOD Act would do that. Right now, it's a big scattered mess. And it would at least start to disclose things, and then you could get that bipartisan consensus on making some changes with respect to small business and state and local governments, at least. Because I know they're going to get upset as these regulatory chickens come home to roost from all of the CARES Act and subsequent legislation that's come down the pipeline.
You mentioned that we'll get all of these things that come out, isn't there is a process, and I think you and your colleague Ryan Young have focused on it to some extent. There's supposed to be a formal process when it comes to new regulations, including publishing what you want to bring out, with these new regulations, there's supposed to be like a public period where they can people can you know comment on it, do a cost-benefit analysis. But apparently these agencies are actually trying to avoid that, and they look for ways of getting around it.
Right, they're pretty ambitious. They're like any other entity. They're going to be ambitious in what they do. But unfortunately, the only way that agencies gauge their growth is through expansion and through bigger budgets and issuing more rules. So they've got different incentives than the normal business would have. So they are supposed to engage in a public notice and comment process. It does often happen. You can look up in the Federal Register the numbers of proposed rules, the numbers of final rules, and things of that sort. But they have this little itch they scratch with respect to sub-regulatory guidance. And a few years back, when President Obama declared, "I have a pen and I have a phone. If Congress doesn't act," that is sort of what got my attention on the dark matter question. So I started looking into what you just described, the ways that they circumvent that notice and comment. And that was when I put together the first inventory on regulatory dark matter. Took an interest in it. We got, you know, Congress got interested in it. There were a series of hearings. We've advanced things like the Good Act. There's other provisions to deal with it. But the more the federal government is encompassing, and especially in the wake of COVID and this huge spending on technology and inflation and climate and so forth, the more the government is doing and fusing or overtaking the private sector, the more it can engage in actions just by doing dark matter and guidance rather than going through that formal notice and comment process. Indeed. That you mentioned.
Well, first of all, bless you for doing this. Bless you for pointing this kind of thing out. Bless you for seeing that it was starting to occur, not starting to, but helped along the way during the Obama administration. And then now we're at the point where, you know, we'll just issue executive orders. We'll bypass Congress. We want to stop somebody from paying off loans. I'll issue an executive order, for God's sake. That's all I need. I don't need no stinking Congress.
That's right. I think Biden has taken the Obama pen and phone to new heights with his whole of government directives. Because it's interesting things. You see both parties grab power during a crisis like they did during COVID, and we saw the eviction moratoria and things like the student loan forgiveness that took place. And Biden would attempt to maintain these programs knowing that the courts were likely to find them, to strike them down, but just take the chance anyway and get the public interested in and excited about the prospect
of
not having to pay things back.
Absolutely. So
it's a weird transition. It's not a good thing for the president, for the executive branch to take on and assume so much power working around Congress. So that's one of the things that will have to be addressed in regulatory reform. The Guidance Out of Darkness Act is just a part of it. There's regulatory budgeting, there's reining in the regulatory power, just cutting mandates all across the board.
You know, what was that old statement that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely? Our government,
Lord Acton, right?
Yeah, our government just continues to grow and grow and grow into a bigger and bigger monster, unless it's curtailed, unless people stand.
I just saw that the deficit now is $1.3 trillion. It's more than the first 9 months of the year, way more than we had last year. So it's more than Thatcher is saying when you run out of other. Socialism is when you run out of other people's money. Now you run out of other people's money, we keep spending anyway.
Yeah, we do. You know, Margaret Thatcher said that. That was a brilliant statement of hers, by the way. The problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money. Well, you know, like you say, and then then Biden gets in front of everybody and says, "Oh, I'm reducing the deficit, for God's sake. I'm reducing it." We should all. He's pounding his chest and lying about reducing the deficit because he's taking us all for suckers. Is he not?
That's the only thing I can interpret, because he continues. He goes around the country in recent weeks barnstorming about the Inflation Act and talking about the jobs he's creating, but he forgets about baselines. He forgets about what was lost and the unemployment that the employment that cratered during the crisis, and the way the deficit and the debt expanded extraordinarily. And he's talking about cutting the deficit by $1 trillion, yeah. But the deficit had been enormous.
Of course. And the other thing that drives me crazy, he's going around saying, I've created millions of jobs since I came in. What? You didn't create millions of jobs. People went back to work after we shut down the country because of COVID.
Right.
And he's getting away with it. I mean, the press never holds him account. It just drives me crazy.
Well, it is interesting to watch them. If you turn on the daily press briefing from the White House, they never challenge him on the kind of question. It's obvious that they're talking about jobs being added in the wake of a crisis, the deficit being cut, but after it had been at record levels. And they just sit there and swallow it and dutifully take notes about it and report that in the headlines.
They can do that and look at themselves in the morning in the mirror, you know?
Yeah, well, in a way, it's like these aren't even press conferences. They're just joint events where they press forward the narrative they have on the advancing the progressive agenda. There aren't any real challenges to what Jean-Pierre says during the day.
No, you're absolutely right. Just unbelievable. Wayne, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. We need people like you in Washington. God help us. Thank you so much for being with us, and I look forward. Go ahead.
Hey, well, I was just going to say thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure for me as well.
Thank you, Wayne, and I look forward to the next time.
Hey, Wayne, when next time you're at the White House, we wanted to give you a clear plastic bag and see how far you can get.
Yeah, I'll swing by.
Okay. Thanks, Wayne.
Take care, guys. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Goodbye. Our pleasure. I like him. All right, let's take our break. When we come back, the crown jewel of socialized medicine, Britain's National Health Service. It's in deep doo-doo, and we're going to tell you about it.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop. If you own a home, I bet you're flooded with tree service mailers. So who do you call? ArborLife Tree Service is my choice. When I needed a bunch of trees taken down, they did it safely and at a great price. But ArborLife not only removes trees, they plant trees, they trim them, they prune, they spray, and they fertilize as well. They're ISA certified, they're veteran owned. I'm telling you, you can't go wrong. Call them for a free estimate. 727-330-1999. That's 727-330-1999. ArborLife Tree Service. They really will go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, that's pretty good. Ed, you're better on the drums than I realized. Hey, we are back, Freedom Works. Thank you so very much for being with us. So I was watching, have you ever watched Maria Bartolomo? I think that's how you pronounce her name. She does a business program on Fox Business and also pops up on Sundays on the regular Fox News channel. And she interviewed Donald Trump. And So I was watching the interview, and among other things, she was talking with him about Senator Tim Scott, who is running for president. And Trump, actually, normally, you know, Trump, he takes a sledgehammer to anybody running against him. But in this case, Trump is praising Scott. And he said that the Republican from South Carolina may be a good fit in his own administration if Trump gets back into the White House.
Well, we called that last week.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did. And I think he might make a heck of a good vice presidential candidate.
Yeah.
He would get a goodly percentage of the black vote. He's very well liked. And he's very conservative. Very conservative. So Trump made the comment during an appearance on Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo. He was also, Trump was complimentary to some of the other candidates that are running. He says he believed that many of his fellow candidates were talented people and that he was already having thoughts about a potential running mate. Anyway, they bantered back and forth. And, you know, it's funny when you listen to Trump, he just, all you have to do is ask him a question and he'll talk for 25 minutes, right?
Mm.
And he actually talks in such a way that you listen to him because he is, let's face it, he's probably the best speaker. If you just cut out all the noise, he's probably the best speaker. You know, he's always pretty much up on things. It's hard for him to be caught missing something. You know, he's usually very...
You know, and I was going to... Yeah. I thought about this morning. It's been awfully quiet on the Trump front.
Uh-huh.
You know, the left...
Not going after him?
Got to be something new coming up.
Yeah.
Been too quiet.
Yeah, and...
Some woman's going to surface, or...
You think?
Some document or phone call. A phone call is going to surface.
Could be, but yeah. I'm guessing that it's only if Trump becomes the nominee, and then you'll get it. Because don't you think, like a lot of people are thinking, the media want Trump to win because they think that Biden can beat Trump, whereas they don't think Biden can beat, let's say, Ron DeSantis.
I think it would be best for them to shoot something out there before the debates, so the debatees have something to discuss.
I see. Oh, by the way, Trump is still not giving you a guarantee about the debate.
About that, but at least it'll give them something to talk about.
Do you think that Trump should... Hey, let's do this. Let's bring in our buddy, by the way, and then we'll include him in the conversation. Our eye in the northern sky is with us. Angelo Ceresi.
Good morning, everybody.
The brother of the infamous Andrew, the master barber Ceresi. This is Andrew's older brother and very... prescient, very cogent, and all of those other words that we don't know what they mean. How are you?
Very good, thank you. How's everybody?
We're good. We're just deciding whether or not Trump should take the debate stage next month. What do you think?
I think he should.
Mm-hmm.
I think he really should. You know, get out, take out there, tell the people what he's going to do. Again, I'm sure everybody knows, you know, what his policies are, and, you know, hear him speak again rather than hear Biden talk all the time.
Mm-hmm. I think he should too, but I think the pool should be kind of tight. I don't want to see somebody has absolutely no chance up there because, like Chris Christie, he's joined the left side, he's got no reason whatsoever to be up there.
Right.
And he's just going to open his mouth and bash.
Well, you know, you have to have a certain.
A percentage.
Percentage.
Yeah, correct. So it should only be about
three
or four.
There's going to be a bunch of them that aren't going to make it.
I know that, but I'm saying it should be the top four, top five.
Top, right, I agree with you.
Not top
four,
seven
top
or eight.
Five.
Let's just take two drags out too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
No, I
top
hear you.
Top four, top five. You're right.
If you were Donald Trump and you realized that if you did not show up at the debate, that the viewership would crater, and you say to yourself, I'm so far ahead of everybody else. I will not show up. Nobody's going to watch the damn debates, and I'll just keep going. What do you think about that, Angelo?
I think if he didn't show up, the crowds would diminish again on him because, you know, people want to see him. They want to see him talk. They want to see him debate. You know, I mean, even when he has his rallies and everything, look at the crowds of people that
go. Well, I got an idea. Here, listen to this. Why not schedule a rally during the debate? go figure out. Yeah, have a rally somewhere during the debate.
But it's always you're gonna
get the wrath of all the other.
Here's the thing: I don't have the problem with the debates and the candidates. It's the moderators I got a problem with their stupid questions and their agendas.
Well, in this particular case, let me ask you this, Ed. Fox News is going to have, I think it's Brett Baer.
Okay.
And one of their female people that are going to be. Right. I actually think that those people are actually going to be.
Okay.
If it was CNN doing it, I agree with you.
Well, you can never accuse Fox of throwing softball questions.
No, because they don't.
CNN. Oh. When they're around Biden, come on.
Right.
I mean, they're just lofting things at him for crying. What flavor is your ice cream?
And right. Well, I was just going to say that, right.
Of course. And yet they would throw hand grenades onto the onto the platform when it's Republicans that they're asking questions.
I got an idea. How about having a pool of the general public ask the questions?
Yeah. Right? But how do you find that public?
I'll tell you the truth.
How do you find that public?
I think the intent is good. Yes, that's number one. Number one is, if you do that, everybody will suspect that you're rounding up the usual suspects, and you're not getting. So,
everybody submits their name into a pool.
I'll tell you what. I think you'd get more hard-hitting questions from expert news people than you would from with all due respect, from the typical guy on the street. That's just my opinion.
The typical guy in the street is the one that's being affected. The media, I mean, what has the media accomplished in the United States?
And
they have destroyed this country all the way.
Well, they can do a town hall.
Right.
There are town halls where the people can come in and do that.
Right.
And I think that's where you have the people. I don't like when you're up on the debate stage and this is the Republican debate or the Democratic debate. I don't want some yahoo standing up and who I know is already biased and is going to ask a biased question. Now, I know, yes, that the reporters are doing some of that themselves. But that's where I would screen the people that are actually
Another rule of the game that should be. Of all the candidates that are up there, they must agree that whoever is nominated, they must vote for. They must get behind.
Well, Trump stay behind the candidate.
Trump will not sign that agreement.
And I got a problem with that. I've got a problem with that. Because if you're telling people then don't vote, that's what happened. That's how Biden got in.
That's right.
If you're telling people don't vote for whoever the Republican is, if I don't get the nomination, that's exactly what happened 2.5-3 years ago. People didn't like Trump, so they didn't vote. Well, they voted for Biden. I didn't vote for Trump.
You know what
I voted
worries me
against
a little bit about Trump? Angelo, I want you to your comment on this as well. If he does not, for some reason, if he does not win the Republican nomination, I think he might bolt and run as an independent, which would ruin the chance.
How could he lose? How could he lose just that big of a lead?
Ed, this is way too early for him to.
Oh, but I'm saying something would have to come out.
Something might.
Okay. Well, then if somebody had evidence of him being dirty and got evidence on, well, then I wouldn't vote for him.
What if DeSantis caught fire? What if all of a sudden he really caught fire?
I think DeSantis is digging his own grave.
Listen, we got over a year before the election. There, all kinds of things can happen. All I'm saying is this: I'm more worried about Trump bolting and running as the third-party candidate, which would ruin, which would guarantee a Democrat back in the White House. Okay, what do you think, Angelo?
Well, you're right. I don't think. Let's face it. The primaries do not start until 5 months from now in January.
Yes, I think you're right about January
or
so.
A lot can happen between now and then. But if he does not get the nomination, he should not start a third party. No way. No,
I agree with you, but I'm worried he would. I'm worried I'm worried that even if he deep down knows that he can't, I think he can convince himself that he can win as an independent, which I think would be almost impossible.
I mean, if you feel that way now, then do it now. Don't wait for the debates.
Right.
Don't do it because you're losing.
He's not going to bolt. He needs the Republican Party.
But that's what I'm saying. You're saying that if he doesn't get the nomination, right. He may bolt.
Yes.
Well, then I think people are going to call him a coward if he does that.
I think so, too.
Because if you're going to bolt, do it now. If you don't agree with the Republican Party, do it now.
Right.
Well, he agrees as long as he's leading, he agrees.
But I'm saying the only reason you would be doing is because you didn't get in.
Yes.
I mean,
he doesn't really care. If he says he cares about America, he won't do the third party.
I agree, Angelo, but do you think he... I throw that out there. I hope he won't. I pray he won't, but let's face it, he's a bit of a loose cannon.
Right, he could do that. He's liable to do that. I agree with you 100%. He's liable to do that. And then that's going to destroy our chances of taking the White House.
Exactly.
Who's the only president that started an independent party and ran on an independent ticket? Wasn't Teddy Roosevelt?
Teddy Roosevelt ran on the Bull Moose Party, and he lost. He had been president as a Republican.
Right.
And he came back a few years after he was president. Remember, he actually replaced an assassinated a president that died in office.
Right.
And he ran, and so he was a Republican at that point. But he ran on the Bull Moose Party.
And he lost.
And he lost, yes.
So that goes to show you that the third party is not going to do anything. Trump's chances of winning as an independent are nil.
I think they are, too. But does he believe it himself?
I know.
That's the question. I think he sometimes fools himself. That's just my thought.
You're right. You're right. And by doing, if he ever did that, he's going to show. It's going to show to the people that I can't win. I can't. I'm not going. You know, if I can't play, I'm going to take my baseball away. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly right. It is always a pleasure to have you, my friend.
Oh, always a pleasure to be on. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Oh, and we'll look forward to you being with us again on Monday of next week.
Sounds good.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Have a good week.
You too. That's Angelo. Our eye in the northern sky. All right, let's take our final break. And when we come back, I promise you, we're going to get around to this story about the National Health Service. They are in a very, very deep crisis.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, and insect control to grinding and removal, you get an experienced, ISA certified, and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Final segment on a Monday, Freedom Works. We thank you for being with us. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern on the Tantalk Radio Network. We hope you can join us every time we're on. But if you cannot, thanks to Ed, all our shows are on podcast. And you can go to our website, which is ourfreedomworks.com. That's O-U-R, ourfreedomworks.com. Click on the podcast button at the top. Ed's got all our shows, and you can listen at your leisure. Bless him. All right. Hey, this just came across the wire. Listen to this. It's funny, but it could be dangerous. Apparently, the Pentagon did a typo, and they ended up leaking millions of sensitive documents via email to the African nation of Mali. A common typo within the U.S. military has misdirected millions of emails and messages containing sensitive info to Mali. This issue comes from the U.S. military's MIL domain name, which is used for emails, which is commonly mistyped as ML, which happens to be the domain for Mali. The leak has resulted in the exposure of unclassified but sensitive info, such as diplomatic documents, tax returns, passwords, and the travel details of top officers. So, if you happen to be in the Mali government, you get to know where all these people are going and when. You might want to go over and say hi as they come down the stairway from the airplane. Okay. Meantime, as it faces 75 this month, Britain's National Health Service, which has been a proud symbol of its welfare state, is in its deepest crisis in history. They are flooded by aging patients, starved of investment in equipment and facilities, understaffed with doctors and nurses, many of whom are so burned out, they're either joining strikes or they're leaving altogether for jobs somewhere else. More than 7.4 million people in England are waiting for medical procedures, everything from like hip replacements to cancer surgery. That is up from 4.1 million before the pandemic began. So these are people, like the people with cancer, they're waiting for months and months to get into the office.
Isn't that the problem in Canada?
It's been a problem wherever socialized medicine is enacted.
Is that their Obamacare, or is it 10 times worse?
It's worse.
Okay.
And you know that Canada started the socialized medical approach sooner than we did. We have been slow to get on board, but Obama, with his so-called Affordable Care Act, really jumped us forward on that. And now look at the wait time. For anybody here in this country, it's gone from, you call up for a doctor's appointment, you can come in 2 days. Now you got to wait three weeks or a month or so. Well, it's even worse in Britain. In the first quarter of this year, more than half of excess deaths in Britain, that is deaths above the 5-year average mortality rate before the pandemic, were caused by something other than COVID. Cardiovascular-related fatalities, which can be linked to delays in treatment, were especially up sharply. And so the deal is that the longer you wait to get in to see the doctor, the worse you can be, you know, and especially if you got cancer or some disease. So this is becoming, and it's becoming worse and worse, and they're waiting longer and longer. I think if I can find the actual average amount of time that it takes for you to see a doctor in Britain. I've got it here somewhere. Let's see. It's like 4 months or 5 months before you can get in to see a doctor. I mean, it's just...
I broke my arm.
Yeah. I mean, what do you end up, I suspect.
I'll see you in December.
You got to run into a med... I don't know what they do. I'm sure there must be something for you. Have to run into an emergency room. If you broke your arm.
If you have the funds, I guess you can go somewhere else.
You know, let's say you got cancer. What you got to do is get in your car, have a car accident. That way you get into the hospital, and while they're fixing your broken leg, you say, "Hey, by the way, check my lung. I got cancer." I mean, it's getting bad. Mm. Scary. All right. It is time, Ed. for our top 10. You remember that we did on Friday the top 10 best NFL stadiums. And do you remember what was number one? Let's see if your memory is good. You were surprised at it.
I do not.
You said it was going to be San Francisco.
Yeah, I remember I said San Francisco.
And I said to you something about, well, if you can see this place, it was Lambeau Field.
Oh, Lambeau, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's find out if you'll guess or know what is the number one word.
And that was a fan perspective, because I've been to Lambeau, and it's very crickety.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, you know they've remodeled it. Have you been there when they remodeled it?
I was there as the remodeling was starting.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, this is the top 10. Apparently, this is New Arena.
Okay.
And they rely on other people's opinions. So okay. We'll see. All right, here we go. Number 10. MetLife Stadium. That's the stadium for both the New York, yes, the Giants and the New York Jets. Certainly better than what Giants Stadium had to offer. The yard drew a pretty hefty price tag, about $1.6 billion. And in the end, it's kind of like some of the other ordinary stadiums.
Yeah.
Number 9. Raymond James Stadium.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. The Bucks. Tampa Bay Bucks. Akin to the same stadium spirit as Jacksonville in Tennessee, Raymond James is not a bad place, especially if you can deal with the Floridian sun, which can be an issue. The upper-level seats can feel a bit steep.
Okay, so you're saying because we have sunlight,
our
stadium sucks.
Well, maybe we should have a dome.
Who are these schleps that are doing this?
I went to the
it
old...
It took me 4 minutes to go to the bathroom.
I was there before... was it before?
Yes.
19, I went to a game in 94.
So you went to the old sombrero with the metal seats.
I almost melted.
Yeah, with the metal seats, you were like
almost melted.
You were like a whopper. He just flipped you over.
You got it. Number 8. Paycor Stadium, Cincinnati Bengals. Riverfront location, nice. Probably enough to do before and after the game. It's inside the stadium with the upper levels, which can be a hindrance. Number 7. First Energy Stadium, Cleveland Browns. Though the stadium is modern enough, it does not necessarily stand out. Furthermore, if the product on the field is poor, then watching bad football along Lake Erie makes it even worse. All right, number 6. Bank of America Stadium, Carolina Panthers. It can be quaint, offer generally favorable views, but like some others we've mentioned, really only offers a serviceable yet somewhat forgettable experience. Number 5. Nissan Stadium, Tennessee Titans. The stadium is pretty accessible. Solid tailgate environment. However, once inside, just like any average sports venue, probably in need of a makeover. Number 4. Hard Rock Stadium, Miami Dolphins. Even with those recent renovations that hope to make the stadium more intimate.
That's a mess.
The home of the Dolphins still seems as stale as it's always been. Number 3. TIAA Bank Field, Jacksonville Jaguars. It's been the home of the Jaguars since they entered the league. While it's nothing fancy, it has undergone some needed work to boost things from a cosmetic and fan-friendlier standpoint. Number 2. Highmark Stadium, Buffalo Bills. Let's just get to number 1 because we don't have much time. Number 1, you want to guess?
Yeah, 30 seconds.
FedEx Field, Washington Commanders. Okay. Just a
you know what all those teams had in common?
What?
Except for one, Buffalo. They're losers.
Yeah.
They've suffered losing seasons.
So that puts a damper on it.
That's why their stadium stinks.
Okay, thanks for listening. We will be back Wednesday. And remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. It's a desperate search outside Philadelphia for two